So when I'm thinking hustle, it's like...
So if I had to word association, activist hustle.
I think activism is just taking a stand.
People of color, minorities, existing as themselves fully and embracing the
hell you out don't,
of that.
You hustle to get something that, like, is not... On the road.
Is always a light at the end of the tunnel.
When you're a hustler, you just make it happen.
Say action every day.
Welcome back, Lena.
I'm so glad to be back, and I am so excited to have these two guests that we have today.
Yeah, I am so beyond excited for this episode and to share it with everyone. And I know I say that every time, but I truly, truly am over the moon excited to hear it because it is a beautiful story by two beautiful people. And I'm going to preface the whole thing by saying that you won't hear as much from me and you won't even hear as much from Lena this episode because since we interviewed two people, it's a little bit longer and we wanted to make sure that we share that conversation with you all.
Agreed. I'm looking forward to our next episode where we debrief and do a bigger, deeper dive into this topic.
So when you're listening today, this project is called the Non-Binary Hebrew Project. So of course, there's going to be some Hebrew language that comes up and some of it's going to be defined and some of it may not be defined. And also we're going to be talking about activism as always. So there's a couple activist strategies also that aren't defined throughout the conversation today. So jump on our social media to see a full list of things. If you hear something that you're not familiar with, we'll make sure that you guys have the resources on our social media pages. But yeah, without further ado, let's get underway. So you're going to hear from Lior and Eyal, who have met each other in this serendipitous way at CU Boulder. And we'll let them take it away.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about who you are and how you started this project.
So my name is Eyal Rivlin. I am a professor at CU Boulder, and I am from Israel, and I have been in Boulder for about 18 years. In many ways, I see myself as a Renaissance man. I like to experience life through many different hats or many different perspectives. And so I have my teacher hat. I also have my parent hat. I have my musician hat that I like to wear sometimes. I have my therapist hat, which is actually part of my training. And I have my commitment to waking myself up and waking the world up in that process hat. The birth of this project was in October 2017 when Lior reached out to me through email to see if they could join my Hebrew class. And I said, of course. And then I noticed that at the bottom of the email, Lior used they, them pronouns. And immediately I had a thought of like, how would I do that in Hebrew? And I've had trans students before, but I didn't have non-binary people identified as non-binary, and so this was a new thought process of how will I do that? And so I invited Lior to my office, and I also texted my family in Israel, some of which are principals and teachers, and you know, in the education system, and I said, how would you do this? And the response I got across the board was, we have no idea. It's a mess in Hebrew. And so we met and we started exploring possibilities of how we can create that and realized that there were some precedents, but only for nouns here and there. And we needed to create a more comprehensive system that people could use in speaking. And I'm happy to pass it on to Lior to share some of that research that they've done.
So, yeah, my name's Lior Gross, and I use they, them, theirs pronouns, and I just graduated from CU Boulder with a master's in ecology, and I like to say that I am a connector And I like to take a systems approach and an ecology-based approach to everything I do, whether that's my community organizing or my understandings of history and culture or the science that I do. And this project, yeah, came about because I was looking to take a Hebrew class in order to put it on my transcript for applying to rabbinical school. And I had learned Hebrew for a good portion of my life, but with language, when you don't use it, you lose it. And I needed to definitely get a refresher on my Hebrew. So I emailed Eyal in the fall and I was like, hey, can I join your class? I think that like when people ask me what allyship is, this is the most mind-blowing thing, that he took the foresight to look down into the signature of my email. Some people don't even read all the way through emails. He looked in the signature of my email, saw that it said they, them, theirs, and was like, what are we going to do about this? How can I help you? And that to me is just like, oh my goodness, you know, allyship means taking the initiative. And I think that was just amazing. And so then I went and did a bunch of research. I looked up papers. There was this paper by Orit Bershling. There were all of these different news articles and editorials that had been written about, like, can this work, by different linguists saying that it couldn't. Habanim Dror, Camp Moshava, had this camper who was actually my mentee when I was there, who came out as non-binary. And so then they created a bunch of different ways to use the words and nouns in English text surrounding it. And so then we took all these precedents that I had gathered from the research and kind of a lit review. And then we trial tested it and said, what works, what doesn't work? And some of the things didn't quite work because the verbs are also gendered. And then we were able to take this kind of testing that we were doing, literally sitting in Eyal's office, bouncing words back and forth off of each other, making weird noises. And we settled on some things that worked. And then we went into the classroom and it was a living laboratory, and all of our classmates got to give us feedback on, you know, this is how I think it should work, and does that work? Is that the right answer? And it was pretty cool to get to do it in this very creative, very low stakes kind of space, because we were just creating it, you know, for me to use. That was kind of like we need to do something. And then we figured, you know, this is a really cool tool. When I went to Queer Talmud camp that summer, people were like, this is the coolest thing ever. And I was like, oh, people are excited about this. So then I made the website in order to share it. And then it went viral. And I was not expecting that at all. So that's kind of where it came about. And the project now as it stands is, like I said at the beginning, it's a way for us to use the structure of the language as it exists to inform a third option, so then we can take the language as it exists and just build it bigger so that it works for mixed audiences when you're talking in the plural, and that non-binary Hebrew speakers can treat themselves with dignity and respect.
So tell me a little bit about how people have been responding to this project.
It opens up the whole conversation, not just about gender, but about really language and the oppressive powers of language. For example, another word that recently has been changing in Hebrew is the word for husband. For many years, it was the word Baal, which means master or owner. And, you know, you can understand in the last generation, it's people have been like, wait, I don't want to call this my husband, my owner, or my master. This doesn't feel right. And so that word has changed, even though it's, you know, it's an ancient biblical word that's been there for thousands of years. And so what it points to is the way our culture is evolving and the language needing to meet that. I would say people who have not been exposed to the idea of you know, a non-binary identity, often that question comes, what does that mean? And then there's an education piece that I feel is so worthy. And again, through the language, they get to understand that, oh, this is on the map right now. This is part of identity right now. So it opens that conversation. And you know, we've had also people kind of push back and say, you can't do this in the language. This is the way the language is. And it makes sense if they're holding a certain, you know, kind of a, I'll use Carol Dweck's term, like a fixed mindset, and they haven't switched to the growth mindset yet of like, well, it hasn't been done yet. And here we are doing it, and here we are actually using it. So it's shifting the conversation towards possibility and towards inclusivity and towards awareness and sensitivity. And to me, that's part of my philosophy as a teacher is I want to make all of my students feel safe and welcome. And I couldn't do that with Hebrew as it stands. So for me, it was well, there's no other way to do it other than evolve the language.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. How about you, Lior? How have you seen this project shift the community or the reception of the community and others around you?
I would say that it's actually how the shifts in the community empowered me to come to building this project. Because like Eyal was saying, language has the power to oppress. It also has the power to empower and to build. And one of the things that really empowered me to start exploring the ancient role that trans and intersex identities have in our tradition, that our rabbis wrote about them in our ancient texts thousands of years ago, was when I came out and I was trying to reconcile, you know, can I still be Jewish and trans? And thanks to a bunch of trans rabbis who have gotten ordained in the past decade or so, there are all of these amazing resources out there talking about the ways in which this is revered in our tradition. And then I wrote a research paper through the Jewish Studies program at CU based on this. And then that summer, I went to Queer Talmud Camp, where I got to meet some of these folks who had done that research, and I got to be in community with 100 different trans and queer Jews and finally see myself reflected in others. And having that resourcing and community and feeling like I wasn't alone really helped me to start showing up fully as myself. And if I hadn't had that, if there hadn't been this movement already in our communities saying there are non-binary Jews here, and not only do we exist, but we are already changing what it means to be Jewish and what it means to be observant, because we are taking our rightful place in our communities and building halacha, which is the Hebrew word for Jewish law, that empowered me to then start building queer radical Jewish spaces and interfaith spaces in Boulder. So I had that foundation to build on. So then when Eyal sent the email like, hey, what are we going to do? I knew that I had a community and a foundation to build on to say, you know what? I get to own that this is my tradition too and take a part in this. So I would say that there is the change that has happened as a result of our project, but our project could not have happened without a cultural shift that has already occurred thanks to the work of others.
Wow. And all the changes that will come after could not be done without the work that you're both doing.
There's this submission box on our website that I put there so that people can send in their comments and everything, because otherwise they were just Googling AL and ICVs and we were getting emails to random accounts and phone calls and stuff. And some people have been putting in the submission box, hey, I'm a non-binary Jew and I didn't know that there were other non-binary Jews, and this is such a useful tool for me. Or, hey, I was just learning about XYZ in my class, whether they're in queer studies and they're learning about language, or they're in a Hebrew class in Israel and they're learning about gender or whatever. And they're asking for resources for us, or they're just saying, you know, thank you so much because this is expanding my mindset and we need more projects like this. And it's really cool to see those responses too. Even from people who are Christian and who are saying, hey, we need more room in our communities, people who are Hebrew scholars who are like, this is really important. So many people giving us feedback and saying, hey, this is what I do. Do you think that that works? And then we can, you know, continue to cultivate this open source resource and workshop it together. So it's also been really cool to see not only how popular it has been, but how people are really interested in engaging with it.
Yeah. And how relatable it is to others. So like you mentioned, you know, sometimes you're feeling like you're the only one fighting a certain, like trying to break a certain wall or trying to get through a certain ceiling. And it's not until you really take the step to be an activist. And in activism, we talk all the time, of course, in this podcast about what is activism. And sometimes activism is just, like you said, being able to bring your full self to a community that may not have other people that look or feel or relate to you. But once you bring your full self, you start identifying them because you've opened that door for them as well.
And we've literally given them the words to talk about it too. We actually had to invent a word for non-binary gender in Hebrew. So it's really interesting, you know, if you think about power and the discourse in terms of, you know, Foucault's analysis of how does the dominant discourse shape the ways in which those who are oppressed in that hegemony get to hold their own power and their own conversations. And so then we can have subversive different languages within that and then insert it back into the dominant discourse in order to assert our power. And so it's really cool that we can create the latticework for that. And so then people have this framework for self-conception.
It's also cross-cultural and cross-language, right? I think that a lot of people in the United States or in the community where I live here in Massachusetts take up a second language, and it's usually either Spanish or French, and they constantly have these questions. But this also is a step to activism, and this is exactly what activism is to me, and I would love to hear from both of you. What is activism to you? How would you define activism? And we can start with you, Eyal.
That is a beautiful question. And I, because of the name of your podcast, I've been reflecting on that today. And the way I see it, you know, you're bringing about social change. And really, everything that you do can be an act of activism. Meaning I see the way that I parent or how I teach or even how I drive and what car I drive, and all of that could be an activist choice. So in a way, for me, you're role modeling through your action. And when this, you know, when this opportunity came up in my classroom, it wasn't even, for me, that wasn't even a question. It was more, we have to do this. This is the right thing to do. There's no... And then actually, in retrospect, looking back and realizing that that pushed buttons for other people, like that was a surprise. Like, wow, really? You don't think this is the obvious thing to do? Like, explain that to me. I needed to understand that. Like, why would they push back on something that obviously needs to evolve? So I think the big paradigm shift was opening to the possibility. I'll use the Hebrew, the chutzpah word, that sense of like, well, we got to think out of the box here and we have to create something. I think also, just a little bit more about activism one of my mentors was a rabbi by the name of Rabbi Zalman Schechter Shalomi, which I really hold in the holy person seat. And one of the things he said was, as people were asking, like, what's the right way to do something? And his response, and even I came to him one time and I said, you know, Reb Zalman, I can't find what I need in the Judaism that exists. And his response consistently across the board was, well, then you have to create it. The continuation of that as a teacher in this setting was, okay, so how do I make the language that I'm teaching meet and honor the people that I'm teaching?
Wow, I love that. I love that if it doesn't exist, create it. And I think right now, you know, in the political climate that we live in, and with the elections that just happened, that has been brought up a lot in the political sense of, like, if there's not a chair for you, bring your own chair. And essentially, this is it, right? Like, if you have a community or a place where you don't see something that you identify with, or a place not for you, I love the notion of, then create it for yourself. How about you, Lior? What does activism mean to you?
I'm trying to think about what isn't activism, because there's a lot of things that are in my mind. It's more about how we go through the world and the decisions we make. I think, what does activism mean at its core is taking the values you have and actualizing them in the world in some way. So for me, activism has looked a bunch of different ways. I have lobbied for bills, and I have staged sit-ins, and I have bird-dogged candidates, and I have led nonviolent direct action and done banner drops, and I have made art and built communities and cooked food for people. And the more things I do, as long as I think the thing that makes it activism for me is when my actions are aligned with my values towards something that is larger than me, in some sort of cognizance of a bigger picture. But I think that it looks a lot of different ways.
That's great too. Everyone gives us different definitions for activism, because it means very different things for everyone. But I think that even just the initial statement of what is an activism is so empowering in of itself. So one of you mentioned that this went viral, and I was looking through the website and saw that there's been a lot of press on it, on the project. And I'm wondering, how do you plan to keep the momentum of the viral response that this project has received?
I think that having organized from a momentum framework before, this was never intended to go viral. So we have a bunch of different things we've been brainstorming, but I would say that I'm not so interested in its popularity as its utility and appliedness. I think that it would be great the more people that know about it, but I would also really love to have a very strong web of relationality around it, where we build it out with the help of a lot of different people, and it's being used in so many different communities everywhere. And that to me doesn't look like a wave of momentum. That looks like slow growth instead. So I think that it's exciting, the viral aspect of it. And, you know, if you're going to use the term virus, right, you have to have the initial colonization of the host before you can start invading the cells and growing more viruses. But I would rather be mycelium and have many, many strands connecting the roots of the trees and sending sugars and nutrients back and forth and having feedback loops instead. And that takes a lot longer, but it becomes a lot stronger.
That was so beautifully said, Lior. And I love that you tied in your other passions into that answer.
I was just going to say, you didn't major in language?
No, I got my master's in ecology, actually, this past December.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, and I just need to pause here, because I want all the listeners to note that sometimes we feel that our activism has to be tied so much to what we are doing, right? Like what we are studying or what we are working on. But to speak of like how organic this came to be, and how you didn't intend it to be this big movement, and you were really just trying to create, you know, a space where
or a way for this language to function for people who are non-binary, and it went viral, but it's not even that we majored in.
I really appreciate what you're both saying, and I really want to echo that sense that we really didn't come into this project with an agenda. Rather, we met a real need. And, you know, I've been a part of many different projects over my life. And there have been projects where when you tap into it, it's almost like the project has its own soul, meaning like it taps into like a truth. And, you know, it the feedback and the response that we've been getting really tells me that there was a real hunger. It's almost like there was a ceiling that needed to be broken through. And once that opening has happened, I feel like more energy can flow in this direction. And my hope, you know, I'm not attached to this being us or ours, or, you know, but rather I hope that it started a conversation, and I hope that this conversation serves many, many, many people. And as Lior said, it's an open source project. There's no money being made. There's no agenda other than to serve, you know, other than to really hear and listen and realize and grow, you know, and evolve. And we want to engage in this conversation to really explore, like, oh, what do you think about this? And this doesn't seem quite right. How would you do this? And I feel like that, to me, there's both creativity in that. There's in my heart, I feel a sense of rightness, whatever the word is. Like, it feels right. It feels like we are meeting society and language at the where they meet, and we're honoring this this evolutionary moment. And, you know, there have been figures over the kind of the history of Hebrew that, like, at certain points as Hebrew was being revived, like, created new words. And I feel like we're tapping into that consciousness of those kind of, you know, giants that created evolved the language to make it more of a spoken modern language. Like, this is the same. We're on the same team. We're waving the same banner in that way.
And just to reflect on that, it's the essence of activism, right? Like, activism is not a lone job. It's not one person comes in, does the change, goes, okay, it's all done, I'm leaving. Like, a true activism that will continue to evolve with its people and continue to bring about change that is positive is an activism that is able to be passed down and collaborate through time as well. You won't even know how far it's really going to go, because the hope for it is that even beyond our lifetimes, it's still evolving. But where do you see yourself in the future in this project? And where do you see the future of the project without you?
I'll start with, as you're speaking, I'm really getting the joy of activism. I know activism can be also very challenging, but the joy aspect of it is exactly that. It's tapping into the evolutionary force. And I really believe that, you know, at least part of why I'm here is to evolve and to help evolve those around me. And so when I find myself in situations where I feel like I'm expanding the awareness, the knowledge, the awakening, the creativity, those are the moments where I come most alive. So when we tap into that, there's something truly magical. I mean that, I'm not exaggerating. There's a joy, there's an excitement, there's an aliveness. I feel like it's almost consciousness coming through is growing in that moment. So I really want to highlight that for any activism. When you're doing the right thing and you feel like, wow, I've made a difference, I've grown the boundaries, I've expanded the walls, as Lior said in our kind of in our mission statement, that's truly that's a gift. If I had to look at my goals, it's important for me to expand consciousness in the sense of that evolving language also evolves thought and evolves ideas. So to create a language that's inclusive, to create a language that can lead to peace, to equality, where, you know, people of any gender identity can feel a sense of equality in the language, so they're not oppressed in the language. To me, that we're creating peace with our words. That's huge. You know, that is amazing. My hope is that this opens a big conversation. You know, just the other day I looked on Duolingo, you know, that app, and there's a whole thread about this project that, you know, I didn't even know was there. So it has a life of its own. It just gives me joy that it's being used, you know, that it's being applied.
I think that it's going to be really interesting being in Israel for the next 5 months and seeing what happens. I'm personally have an agenda. I am going to try to introduce it to everyone that I meet who is willing to partake in this experiment with me. And if they don't want to, you know, it's fine. Like, when people misgender you, it hurts. But it's not usually malicious, right? And so if people aren't ready to do this yet, then it's not because they have a problem with me being trans. It's because they need some time and space to work on it. And maybe it just has to, you know, catch up to them and they'll catch the wave the next time around. We'll see. But I'm doing, I'm on this internship with 60 students in the middle of the desert, in the middle of nowhere. So it's a small focus group. I'm already leading a whole workshop for them on what is non-binary, because the housing at this internship is male and female. They have to put me somewhere to sleep. So we're going to see what happens. And so it's just an opportunity to share and learn. There's just all sorts of exciting opportunities for growth in the immediate future in terms of this. So since the beginning of this project, it hasn't really been something that like we've been able to control. It really has a life of its own, and we're just helping channel it.
So what is it that moves you and drives you to bring this everywhere you go?
Well, to be fair, I am terrified. And I was crying on the phone last night with some of my trans chosen family who are back in Colorado, because it's really scary. And I don't think that I'm going to be subject to physical violence, but I can't know for sure. I can hope and hope my best that this is an open-minded community who are coming to this program that is explicitly using dialogue and community building for peace processes, right? They give scholarships to Jordanians and Palestinians. They invite Israelis and international folks so we can have conversations. That's the mindset people are coming to this program with. I am still terrified of showing up as trans, but I can't be stealth because, you know, my face is on newspapers everywhere with non-binary. So it's like, I guess I have to. I don't really have the option of not stepping up. My options are suffer in silence or do the thing and show up as my full self. And whatever consequences there are, I don't get to be in control of that. And I have a loving, supportive community who I can call and text, and I know that they'll be there for me, and it's gonna be hard, and that's just the way that it is. I don't know if you've heard of this idea of hope punk, but it is something that I aspire to embody. It's this whole idea of the trend against aesthetic of grim and dark and dreary and apocalypse that we always see, where it's like everyone for themselves and everything is gritty. Like, think Batman, that's grimdark. Hope punk is like Steven Universe, where it's like, yes, we are fighting fascism, but that doesn't mean that we can't go out for pizza and love our family and sing songs, because I don't think that like the essence of it is that we're eventually going to get to like this like point at which we fixed everything and it's all going to be good. I think that that's the point of it all, is it's a constant struggle to keep uplifting, but there's joy and beauty to be found there. So why not as well just keep doing it?
I hope your listeners are witnessing the mystical and revolutionary power of Lior, and what a joy it is to be in your presence and really take in the way you express yourself and act in the world.
What are some other challenges that were brought up that have inspired you to move forward with this work, or that surprised you or didn't?
I think that it was really amazing for me to see that the article that was written in the Times of Israel wasn't just about our project, but they went and interviewed a bunch of different stakeholders. There's this thing called the Hebrew Academy, and they are not the language police. What their role is to try to take the zeitgeist and currents that are happening within Hebrew speakers and apply it to different creation of words and rules and structures and such. So like, how do we make words for all the technology that exists, right? That when Eliezer ben Yehuda was revolutionizing Hebrew in a way in the 1800s to make it a spoken modern language, they had no clue what a tweet was going to be, right? And so often in vernacular, people are going to use the English cognate. The Hebrew Academy tries to make Hebrew words for it. And so they had some folks from the Hebrew Academy actually interviewed in the article saying, you know, if people want to do this, then that is their own prerogative to do. We can't endorse it as official Hebrew. And so the idea is, if you get enough people speaking it, then you can take it to the Hebrew Academy and be like, there's enough people doing this. Does it count? And so Eyal and I have this dream of taking it to them eventually, presenting it. But until that day, I really think it is a matter of effective implementation. And, you know, some people want it to be being made in Israel. Some people want it to be, you know, the project of people who are speaking Hebrew as their primary language. And that totally makes sense. And there's going to also be some pushback articles that got written about, you know, you can't degender Hebrew, but that's not what we're trying to do. And so I think that that's on us in order to communicate more effectively about what our project is. And also, if people don't like the project and it's not for them, because like Eyal was saying, it's a whole paradigm shift, right? It's a whole paradigm shift. Making a language work in a non-binary way creates avenues for non-binary thinking when you didn't have that option. So you definitely had nuance, right? But you didn't necessarily have non-binary thinking as easily. And so it's, I think, a matter of also just, there's a lot that we can do to communicate effectively. And then there's also a lot of patience and love we have to bring to it and say, it will work out for who it's going to work out for right now. And whoever wants to use it as a tool, I'm happy that they have access to it. And for those folks who it's not going to work out for, they don't have to use it. Nobody's forcing them to use it. And maybe it'll end up being used widely across the country eventually. Who knows? But until then, you know, right now it's just a little baby seedling, and a lot of people are wanting to water it. So that's pretty cool.
People are what move language, and language lives through people. And while granted, you can grab a book and try to learn it, the best way to do it is through communication. And like you mentioned earlier, like, if you don't practice it, you'll lose it. And if people start practicing a new way of language and this new wave of non-binary language, then that is what will be used and will continue to live on through people. And it just makes me very, very hopeful.
And it's also interesting, too, within Jewish tradition, it's really, in just in terms of how the law works, is you can have all of these different ways where people can contribute, depending on which movement you're in, can contribute to what the halacha, what the laws are, Based on different sources of kind of like authority. You can have something from Torah, you can have something that's a precedent in the law, you can have something that's a precedent in the Talmud, you can have all these different levels. But one of the things that you can also use is your personal lived experience based on the way that you have individually walked through the world. And one of the cool things about Jewish tradition is we really want to put things into boxes and categorize them, but we have a really good way of also holding multiplicity. The name of God cannot be spoken, right? We have this certain ineffability, and so there's this mental way to kind of hold multitudes that is embraced in our tradition in so many ways. And part of that is the ways in which we approach each other, where you can vehemently disagree on something, and at the end of the day, you can step back and say, okay, you want to come to dinner now? And so that's something that I really love too. And it's definitely something that has to be negotiated in Israel on many fronts because of the different levels of religiosity and how people interpret things and the ways that they want to live their lives and who gets to have authority and power. And there's all sorts of dynamics there. But at the end of the day, there is, I believe, a certain sense in many Jewish folks I've met of, we are here for each other as a global family, and we're responsible for each other. And so we might not quite see eye to eye, but I can respect you and where you're coming from, and hold that duality of you have a valid point and you have a valid point. There's in the Talmud, there's the school of Shammai and the school of Hillel, and they're constantly disagreeing, constantly. And sometimes there's compromise. We usually go with Hillel. There's only a few cases we go with Shammai, but both are preserved in the tradition, and both are still discussed for their merit. And if that shows me anything, it shows me that we have the ability to take that which we can't quite understand the importance of, and still try to turn it over and over and over in order to get something from it.
Right. So when you talk about disagreeing, but being able to come over to dinner, it's not just about disagreeing. You are laying down something that is super important, which is just the language to even talk about it, the ability, like you said earlier about, you know, it's about learning that there is a they. And you don't have to agree or disagree with it. It's just a tool that's like that in itself is like a learning. Nobody's asking you to pick if you're gonna, you know, or you don't have to use it if you don't feel comfortable, like you said earlier. But it's a tool that it has now been presented to you. And whether you choose to use it or not is up to you. And I think that is so, so, so important, because it's not being done. I guess the other things that the downside is that, darn, these languages are so gender, right? But that gives us the opportunity to say, hey, let's tackle the language. And through that, we're tackling the issue, right? Where in other cases, the language isn't really the opening point. And I think that it's difficult, but there's also some beauty to that.
And it's also interesting. In languages where there isn't that much gendering, such as English, it's still so hard. So it's not so much, in my experience, about the language. It's about the mindset.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the mindset to hold it, and you also don't have the traction with the language of like, oh, I can use that word for this, even if you have the idea, it's a little bit of both, but it really is about, like, I think a mindset too of like, oh, there can be a they that is a singular person because it expresses that person more fully. And I use they unintentionally. And I think it's wrapping your head around the idea of it that is scary. Just like with race, it's scary to admit when you have privilege and you might be contributing to the detriment of others because you don't want to admit that. You don't want to hurt people. You haven't been trying to hurt people, but it happens anyway. And with gender, it's really scary that people can be doing the things of breaking these ideas of rigid gender roles because you've personally been hurt by how rigid these gender roles are. And then they're just going to go and upset the whole system. And I don't have to, like, do all these things anymore. Well, then what am I supposed to be doing?
Yeah.
I don't know. And it's scary. And there's a lot of resistance there. And the interesting thing with Hebrew, right, is we see in the Torah, we see the genderness of Hebrew being used subversively. So it's not a new thing. We see God being addressed as masculine and feminine. We see people like Rebecca being talked about as a na'ar instead of a na'ara, a young man instead of a young woman. We see feminine words being used to describe Joseph in terms of his beauty that are used to describe his mother, Rachel. So it is not so much the language's genderedness as the mindset with which we can take to apply to it itself and the whatever fear or pain you're bringing into it, I think.
It's so true. And I think that fear drives a lot of us and it shouldn't. You shouldn't be driven by fear, but you should also not become stuck because of hesitation around what others might fear.
And we also hold this scarcity mindset of, you know, there are these activist points that we get, right? And so if somebody doesn't know the right word for something, it's so much easier to just dismiss them as a bigot than to sit down with ourselves and be like, you know, this isn't about them attacking me. This is genuinely they want to learn. And it's going to be painful for me in this moment, especially if I'm a person with the marginalized location around this. And then I have to decide whether I can expend the energy today to do this education or just refer them to a resource or ask somebody else to help with me. But in this moment, they are genuinely wanting to understand and build this bridge of compassion with me. And if I bite their head off and say, you're already supposed to know that, don't be transphobic, then that's going to shut them down. And so I'd rather take the approach of being like, oh, you know, I am in a position as a white, class privileged, non-binary, Jewish, disabled person that I can spend the energy today and educate you about this so somebody else doesn't have to who might not have the spoons for it. So, you know, it I think it's a matter of assessing yourself and where you're at. And also taking a step back and saying, is this genuinely an attack on me? Or can we have this as learning here instead? And I think that, you know, that's where I always come from is like, what is this person afraid of and where are they hurting? And then that helps me speak to them in a way that they might be able to hear easier. Otherwise, it makes it very inaccessible for people to try to do the right thing who have good intentions.
Lyra, it has been such a pleasure talking to you. To wrap it up, can you just tell our listeners how they can be in touch with you or follow where you're going and what you're doing? Are you on social media? Or we are going to put the website up with the episode, so they'll have access to that. But how else can we stay in touch with you and Eyal and the wonderful project that you have started?
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been lovely having this conversation. I have learned so much, so thank you. There is a contact us box on the homepage of the website, which is nonbinaryhebrew.com. And so if you want to get in touch, that goes directly to Eyal and I's inboxes. both of us. I am not easy to find on social media, I guess, because I don't spend a lot of time on it, but I am on Facebook. My name's Lior Gross. If you want to friend me and talk to me, just send me a message first so that you're not a random person I think might be a troll. And yeah, I would say, yeah, the best way to get in touch with us is through that contact us box on the website. And if you're interested in getting involved, share the website and do what you can in your communities to support folks in whatever way that looks like. If that means, you know, if you have some sort of organization you're part of and you're doing a fundraiser, some people that really need help right now are different initiatives for trans women of color. There's different initiatives right now for trans folks who are in the military, who are getting, you know, discharged. And there's always a need to look for, and there's certain skills we all have that we can take to apply to that need. So if there's something that calls to you, get a couple of friends together, find somebody who is an expert on it if you don't hold a marginalized identity around it, and try to figure out something you can do. It doesn't have to be super big, but I believe in you. And yeah, share the website.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Lior. I really, really appreciate our conversation. You have filled my cup back up, and I really appreciate that. So thank you.
Oh, I feel full too.
Have a good night, okay?
Take Bye. Care.
And this is a good time to say that Eyal had to jump off early to put his kids to bed, but we are so grateful to him as well for sharing with us.
So what did you think about all that, Rachel? I have a couple of thoughts, but want to get an initial one.
I think that their outlook on activism truly brings a smile to my face. The idea of activism as compassion and love and bringing that perspective to it is a beautiful thing. I can't wait to talk about that more.
I'm personally so excited for talking more about how different generations have either lifted us or helped us pave the path of activism for us, you know, millennials and Gen Zs.
Yeah, and if you listen to our next episode, Lena and I plan to get in a little bit more conversation about language and religion and gender norms, which was covered a lot today, but we're just going to do our research and our due diligence even more to come at it from a couple of different perspectives and share it with everyone.
You know, one of the things that I found most interesting about this one was how this form of activism was stemming from an actual need. Like, it was unplanned, unscripted. You know, Lior didn't know what they needed to be able to incorporate this language with non-binary terms. And immediately Eyal saw the need, and all of this beautiful program stemmed from it. And I think that having this be such a genuine way of activism is really, really cool to me.
Yeah, I'm so happy that their story reached us. So shout out to our producer, Aaron, who brought us this idea to reach out to them and interview them today, because I feel lighter after listening to them, and I hope that everyone else does too.
Me too. And I think that we should go back and, just similar to Tina's episode, just dive in deeper into what are these gender norms, how does language play into it, how have other generations contributed or not to our activism. And I'm really excited to do that deep dive, because I think when it comes to language specifically and gender norms, we're going to tackle some big, big learning.
Yeah, so in 2 weeks, look out for that episode, everybody.
Awesome.
And we're going to take a moment to thank everybody who made this podcast possible, starting with you, the listener. Without you, there would be no us. I'd also like to thank the Activist Hustle team, starting with Rachel Sullivan, your producer and director, Aaron Taylor, our producer and editor, Brandon Rush, our creator, Amina Chandani for your creative logos, The Yard for lending us your space to record, And a final shout out to Blueprint Leadership. If this episode has at all inspired you to take action, remember, we have support for you. Blueprint is a leadership program made by young activists for young activists. Check out blueprintldc.com/services and see how we can support you on your activist hustle.